Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Sean Sokolowski, 16 years of combination experience, a firefighter driver for the City of Butler Bureau of Fire and part-time firefighter for the City of McKeesport in Pennsylvania. Sean is a man of few words and doesn't like the limelight being shined on him, but was a key component in making the Jimmy Ellis Training Weekend a success along with members of the Butler County Fire Chiefs Association. It's no secret that to become professionals, whether career or volunteer, we must not let training take a backseat and allow complacency to make a home within ourselves or our organization. And Sean drives home why that and leadership go hand in hand. With that, I present Mr. Sean Sokolowski.
My name is Sean Sokolowski. I've been in the fire service for 16 years, starting in 2008 as a junior firefighter in Cranberry Township, Butler County, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. Came up through the ranks there as junior firefighter, got a lot of my training done to being just a regular firefighter at the age 18. Was looking to do more, so in 2012, I did the live-in program for Adams area. And that's kind of what focused me more into getting into a career field of the fire service. I was kind of undetermined. I worked construction growing up, so I was looking to go maybe to the operator, engineers, run equipment, but saw a Facebook ad for the City of McKeesport hiring part-timers, so I took my shot, and I passed the test, I passed the physical agility, and I didn't get offered a job. Luckily, 2 weeks later, I got the phone call from the chief, and that was 2015, so I started in McKeesport part-time as a fireman. McKeesport, if anyone's not familiar, is a pretty rundown mill city that had a huge economic decline back in the 70s and the 80s. A city of 60,000 people down to under 20,000 now. A lot of vacants, a lot of fires, a lot of crime. I still work there as a part-timer to this day. That really gave me the hook on the career field of being a fireman. So I was just out looking for other jobs, whether it was part-time to fill those hours or trying to get a full-time spot somewhere. Western PA doesn't have a ton of opportunities, more now than then, full-time jobs right off the bat. So I took the test in a place in Mercer County, Borough Greenville, and got hired part-time there. Smaller scale, same dynamic. It was an industrial city that had an economic decline. Worked there for a little over 2 years. So I got hired part-time in Butler in 2017. Sticking with the storyline, Butler's in the same boat, steel mill town that dropped in production. They closed part of the mill. But got promoted in Butler to full-time in 2018, and I currently work full-time for the City of Butler as a firefighter driver, if you will. We're a short-staffed department. We have a minimum of four guys working. We had up to five through some safer grants and contractual negotiations right now. We're looking to maybe add some staffing, but we all know how that goes. Just got done taking the written test for promotion for lieutenant. Waiting to do my oral interviews for that, so I'll probably be on the list for promotion. Something that I didn't necessarily look forward to doing. I really enjoy being a firefighter and driving. But I guess everyone has their time where they need to move forward. And in a smaller department, there's only so many options and people that are eligible for it. So looks like my time's coming, and we'll see what that new journey brings.
Okay. All right. I love it. I love hearing it. I'm going to go back a little bit. So you started out as a junior firefighter, and then a couple years later down the line, you said you became a live-in with the Adams Area Fire Department. How Correct. Much of a role did becoming a live-in change your mindset when it came to the fire service and if you wanted to do this full-time?
As a junior firefighter and just, I guess, a regular firefighter as I was younger in Cranberry, it was all at-home response for calls or the rare times you were at the station. So when I became a live-in and was at the firehouse for days at a time or, you know, long periods, and you got to kind of live that firehouse life. It made me look into, I really enjoyed this, so this may be a career choice for me. So I'd say that it really pushed me towards that career field. It definitely took over me as loving the fire service and becoming more into it. I met a lot of great connections through the live-in program and a lot of opportunities to excel forward.
Okay. And how much of a role, and I want others to hear, like whether it was an individual or individuals that changed your mindset. Cause you know, one of the things I believe is if you can find somebody that truly cares about the job and they either take you under their wing or they're trying to show you the way, to me that also changes your mindset on how people should view this job.
Right. So there was a few of them in that time period. The one that stands out the most is someone we'll talk about through this more, and that'd be the late Jimmy Ellis. He started as a junior firefighter at Mars, which turned into Adams Area through a merger of the Mars Volunteer Fire Company and the Valencia Volunteer Fire Company. From day one, Jimmy was always the guy at the firehouse that was always looking for people to be their best, but the most humble person to get you there. He didn't get mad at people. He always tried to push them to the next level through ways that I can't even describe. He's just an all around was a great person, an amazing training instructor to have, a role model. And if you asked everyone in this area, his name would come up multiple times.
Okay. with that being said, I'm kind of going to go into the first question of what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So I think aggressive, everybody takes the word aggressive in a different manner. A lot of people take it in the wrong manner, in my opinion, and think of it as rogue or cowboys. To be aggressive, you have to be smart as well. So we have the experience, we have the training to know the limitations of the situations and the environment that we're putting ourselves and our crews in, but we're also not leaving anything on the table, so we're making sure that we get that task done, or you know, we're pushing down that hallway that last 10 feet where others may not.
Okay. I can't argue that. I can't argue that one at all. So going back, I'm gonna kind of go back just one more time. So obviously Jimmy Ellis had a profound impact on you and very many others that I was fortunate to hear a few months ago back, because that's one of the things about the fire service. It's so vast and there are so many individuals that are trying to do or that are doing like great things, but you just don't hear about it. So me coming up there, that was the first time I got to hear and but see the impact that Mr. Ellis had on the fire service down in that area. So upon after your Adams area live-in days, you said you applied for the city of McKeesport and you passed everything, but you didn't get the call. How did
Correct.
that not stop you from like, all right, well, if that's the case, then I'm gonna try to find another place to go to.
I was, you know, I was discouraged like anybody. I knew from the get-go they were only hiring two spots. I ranked number three on the list. So I was disappointed to say the least. But I knew I was still on the list and I would have opportunity for it. But I think that just kind of let me dig in and realize this is something I want, and you know, I knew the process of how to get there now, so it was just a matter of trying to find more opportunity. I tested for a lot of places locally, not anything out of state from here. I really don't know why I didn't go out of state or look around. I think I was more or less, I was super happy with how things were going with the volunteer side and things in my personal life that I didn't want to just up and leave the area.
Okay, that makes sense. I get that. And so you finally you get the call. You're a part-timer there. Did the same passion and skill set to you from Adams area? I'm assuming that pretty much followed you into McKeesport and then following to Butler.
Yeah, I would say so. Huge dynamic difference between McKeesport and the area I grew up in. Like I said, McKeesport held a high place for a lot of people back in the day as a very, very well progressed city, and then the economic downturn has turned it into a hard place for a lot of people to remember as what it was. And the area I grew up in is a very up and coming place with, opportunity around the corner for everybody. So it was a cultural shift for me. And it was a huge tactic change in firefighting. I came from volunteer fire departments that, yeah, every time you went to training, it was four or five guys as a crew and so on and so forth. Where McKeesport, our minimum staffing was five of us, split between an on-duty deputy chief and two guys on a quint and two guys on an engine. We could work up to seven, eight, or nine, but that didn't always happen. So you got to learn how to do a lot quickly by yourself and with a short staff crew.
Okay, and for those that don't know, including myself, you kind of hit on it, but I want to go a little bit in more detail. The city of Butler, city of McKeesport, one station each.
McKeesport is two stations down from four stations, if I do recall, back in their prime.
Okay.
The current dynamic for McKeesport is the downtown firehouse has a 75-foot quint, and then the deputy chief in his own vehicle. And then the station two, which is in Renzi Park, has an engine with two guys on it. That's the minimum staffing, and it can go up to nine, which would allow for the deputy chief and then riding four and four on each piece. And then Butler was two stations back into the late 80s, I believe it was. And then they closed the South Side station. And now we're down to one station. They had six to seven guys on duty with the two stations. Now we're down to a minimum of four. Two of the shifts still have five guys on it. But like I said, we're it's a contract year, so anything can change.
Right. Okay. And roughly, how many calls does the city of Butler see?
So we're down in call volume. The city of Butler Fire Department used to, if an ambulance got dispatched in the city, we got dispatched with them. So in our peak year, which was the first year into COVID, we were running over 4,500 calls. That includes a lot of medicals. At the time, it was probably 80, 85% EMS runs, just first responder. We don't transport. And 15% fire runs. The city had since stepped in and took us off some of the non-emergent medical calls as we were getting tied up for quite some time with some shortages in ambulances for medical calls that we really couldn't do anything on other than we were just stuck there sitting with people. Not to say anyone's emergency isn't important, but it truly wasn't an emergency. And our county's CAD system doesn't have the ability to kind of triage those calls prior to dispatch. So now we're down into like the 2,500 range, and our fire calls have gone up and our mutual aid responses have gone up. So we're probably looking more of like a 60% EMS calls, which for any firefighter is good.
Okay. And as far as if a structural box comes in within the city limits of Butler, what's your first alarm assignment consist of?
So we have the on-duty crew staffs an engine and a mid-mount tower ladder with two and two. If it's a shift working five, the fifth guy will be the back step on the engine. So you get those two pieces. We have a Veterans Affairs hospital right up the road that still has career staffing. So we get the three to four guys from the Butler VA on an engine. And then there's we're completely surrounded by Butler Township, which has a volunteer component. We get an apparatus out of them. So our first alarm guaranteed is seven to eight firefighters. And then depending upon the volunteer staffing, it can go up from there.
Right. Okay. So you're definitely you're in an organization where you're having to do more with less. So with that being said, how important is taking training seriously, especially because you're not in an organization where you can dump manpower like that at the drop of a hat? You have to wait on mutual aid response to come in.
Right. So One of the things that I always see in training is we need to make sure that when we are doing training, we're setting ourselves up for realistic scenarios. So that way, the training we do coincides with the job and the task that we're actually going to do on a scene. I'll use an example. You're training on deploying hose lines, whether you use Minuteman, single stack, double stack, triple air loads, whatever it may be. We need to have realistic obstacles when we're stretching those lines so we get the sets and reps how we're going to do it in real life, not just going out in the parking lot pulling straight off the engine. We walk far enough off the engine, the hose should flake out perfectly fine, but there's no fire you've gone to where you've pulled right off the cross slate, went right through the front door down the hallway, and the fire's right there. There's always some obstacle we need to go around. So we need to make sure that our training that we're doing matches the real life job characteristics that we're dealing with. And that changes for people, but everybody knows what they're up against.
No, that's facts. Okay. So with that being said, what kind of realistic training does Butler and McKeesport like do for both agencies?
McKeesport is more crew dependent. Each shift kind of does their own training. The department provides outside classes on more broader topics, but each shift kind of handles their own training. I know we just had a new part-timer start with us in McKeesport the other day, so kind of like they got a check-off sheet. Their first so many hours, they don't count towards minimum staffing. So you go through and do the basics, make sure they're good with deploying the hose lines, packing the hose lines, knowing the equipment on the apparatus, hooking up hydrants, as simple as donning your SCBA. You get people from volunteer realms that they use MSA, we use Scott, and so on and so forth. So hitting the basics, and then after you get through that point, it's kind of crew, like I said, shift specific. As far as it seems like it goes based on recent events. If we had a fire and this didn't go well, then it seems like you'll see shifts start picking up and doing training geared towards their shortcomings.
Right. Okay.
Butler, we've been fortunate. Our civil service regulations only allow us to hire part-time and then promote to full-time, but there's a clause in there that if we don't have a viable list, we can hire straight full time. So for the last 3 years, we've been just hiring straight full time, which has given us the ability to bring people in on a full time scale and schedule, and they have to do 240 hours of training where they don't count towards the minimum. And there's a 48-page probationary firefighter book that covers everything from administrative functions down to some basic level technical rescue skills. And then obviously we need to add in the driving component, pumping, aerial operations. Once they get off the 240, then they're assigned to their permanent shift and on probation for roughly the next 6 months, where that shift will kind of hone in on the more specifics and get them geared towards their actual role, which is, we hope to be a backstep firefighter, but like I said, with the current dynamic of staffing, some of these newer hires have gotten thrown into driving quite quickly. So we've been busy with a lot of training aspects.
All right. And with that being said, in your opinion, what, especially in your area, what do you think the fire service can do better on or improve when it comes to recruitment and retention?
So I always look at recruitment and retention. I just had a conversation about this with one of the local guys here that got hired out of state. We only have so many people to pull from. We're not getting the numbers of new firefighters just coming off the street that are like, "Oh, I want to do this." So whether it's in the volunteer realm or even the career realm, we have to stick out as opposed to other people. We're pulling from the same hat. So how are you going to look better to grab those people? And it may not be right, but it's reality. But culture is a huge thing in any firehouse. Anyone that's been in the firehouse, anyone that's worked in a firehouse, you can tell from walking into a firehouse of is down to how the walls look and how the crews are acting that are on station, if it's a fire station or if it's a firehouse. And not everybody understands the distinction between that. Firemen are looking to go to a firehouse and have that culture of just being a fireman, where a fire station, a lot of times it's they're there for a job, or in the volunteer realm, they're there for the right reason to do good by their community, but it's not a priority for them.
Okay, I get that. And so with I'm gonna assume with both departments that you work for, you guys have a strong culture. I mean, I would say you'd have to, because with how short your staffing levels are, it's probably even more realistic, I should say, maybe, that you guys are in it together, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, instead of everybody being in their own bunks, if that's the situation, like, everybody kind of hangs around together, because that it builds that camaraderie and that true sense of meaning with each other.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that with both places I work. It seems the norm is the crews together doing stuff, eating dinner together, eating lunch. The culture in McKeesport is very driven by, we have a lot of senior guys, some that are due to retire soon, that are busy years they worked through, so they got to see a ton of fire, a ton of stuff. And I think that drives some of the younger guys to try to embody the busy times they went through. Obviously, we've slowed down some, but I think that helps push that culture there and continue it. Butler is a very unique dynamic right now. We're a very young department. We've had a ton of retirements in the past roughly 2 years. So we're actually in the process of having the ability to kind of, I don't want to say rebuild the department. It's not that. It's kind of refocus it into a way that seems to make more sense for the current dynamic of what we have. So it's kind of unknown what direction we end up in. I know that we're pushing for certain directions, but there's a lot of moving parts to that.
Right. Okay. All right. Understood. With that being said, I'm going to go on the topic of leadership, seeing how you are on the list to be made. So, with what does leadership look like in your eyes, especially with you potentially coming up to becoming a lieutenant? What kind of characteristics should and what kind of characteristics do you want to emulate, for the crew that you would be supervising?
So the number one thing with any leader is the higher in rank you get, the less it becomes about you. And I think that a lot of people lose sight of that. And we, as human beings, we can be selfish, but we have to make sure we keep that on the forefront, that as we get up higher, we're here for the people below us to make sure that they're doing well, getting the opportunities that they want and need, and protecting them. And I think that goes to play into a lot of how the crews react to the leaders. As far as I would do anything for an officer that asked me to do something, knowing that they would do anything for me. Everybody always says, you respect the position, not necessarily the person in some certain aspects, but we shouldn't be having that discussion or that battle. You should respect the position and the person, because that person in that position respects you and is looking out for your well-being, and you're willing to do whatever you need to do to help them out, because they're going to stick their neck out for you too.
Right. All right. But unfortunately, we have it's a flip-sided coin. You have those, you learn, in my experience, you learn from both. You learn from good officers and bad officers. Probably more so the bad ones, like, okay, I do not want to be like this individual. But why do you think sometimes, and this is just your opinion only, why do you think sometimes, though, we have officers who once they get that title or those bugles, it's like a flip of a switch and they totally forget what it was like being a fireman. Like, all they worry about is themselves, and they some might not, I don't want to say like they're demeaning to their crew, but they're just not with it. They forget that it's supposed to be a firefighter first. I should lead by example.
I think a lot of it comes from the way they came up through the ranks? What was the leadership that they had as they were coming through, and the role models and the environment that they got to live through? It really plays a part on your upbringing through the fire service, of who influenced you as you were coming up through your younger years. And it may unfortunately be one of the only things you know is what was done to you. And a lot of people have struggled to separate that and become themselves or who they want to be when they get into these leadership roles, because they revert back to muscle memory of what was always done to them.
No, that's, I mean, yeah, I get that. I get that. Okay. So I'm gonna kind of move a little bit fast, as I usually say, like fast forward to the tragic news of Jimmy Ellis passing away. So my question to you on that is, what, when everything occurred, what triggered you to go, hey, you know what? This man was such a huge mentor of mine, whether he knew it or not. And the stories I remember hearing from the conference was he would not want to be put on a pedestal as he was. I remember, Mr. Danny Doyle said that, you know, he would hate the fact that, you know, everyone was there for this conference for him. So with that being said, what caused you, or what made you go like, all right, you know what? I'm going to form this conference, get as many people and instructors that I can involved to shed light on what Mr. Ellis did for the fire service in Butler County.
So the idea of the training weekend was not my idea. Not to say that a ton of people didn't have an idea about that, because Jimmy was all about training. His career path, with the volunteer fire service through Mars and Adams, and then he worked in Wilkinsburg, just outside of the city, got hired by Pittsburgh. Plus, he was the fire chief in the Air Force Reserve Base down outside of Pittsburgh. I mean, he lived the fire department, and training was a huge thing for him. Teaching out at FDIC with Chief Crawford and the RIT drills. I know he had been out and done some classes with the guys out of FDTN, Champo and JJ, and all those guys out of Bowling Green. So I think everybody's mind first went to do something to honor him. Training was the way. But like I said, was not my idea. The day of his funeral, we were sitting at the fire station with everybody after the services, and I truthfully don't know where the idea started. It got passed around to a bunch of us. We're going to do something next year, and of course, everybody's like, "I don't care if I have to hand out water bottles to somebody. I want to be a part of it." So shortly after the new year, Jimmy passed in 2022. The beginning of 2023, they formed the Jimmy Ellis Firefighter Foundation. And the whole purpose of that organization was to promote training and promote opportunities for firefighters to get training. There's a group that recognized that, not everyone can afford to go to some of these higher level training opportunities throughout the country. And there's a lot of good information out there that they should be able to obtain. So it was a funding opportunity to send them, as well as a way to promote more localized training. So they scheduled the original board scheduled the first Jimmy Ellis training weekend. Excuse me. And that was in late 2023, I believe, September. And it didn't have a huge turnout. And it's no one's fault. It was short notice, and it had followed a huge training event that we had done through another organization, like 2 weeks. So it was a lot in a month's span, and no fault of anybody's. Those guys really wanted to make sure within the 1 year anniversary they got, well, shouldn't say that within, but close to it, they got a training event in. But after that training event, we sat down and pitched the idea of the Jimmy Ellis Firefighter Foundation and another organization I'm involved with, the Butler County Fire Chiefs, to go together and do one large event, because we each at that point that year had done a larger training event. And there was definitely some apprehension, but everyone agreed to it. And it was a long year, but as you can see by the event that you got to attend, I think for being the first large event in this area and us having no idea what we were doing, we did pretty well.
No, you guys did. I pretty well is an understatement. You guys did awesome. I mean, you really did. You had a lot of what I call rock stars come in teaching various classes. I didn't get to go to any of the hot classes, but for me being there and attending very many lecture portions of the class, it was fantastic. It was that. So, you know. I know you're very humble. I know you probably don't. I'm sure you hated the fact that during the lecture series they stopped and they thanked you and had people. I'm sure you're. No one likes that. They're like, oh fuck, like damn. I don't need these people clapping for me. But you were very instrumental in definitely getting that going though.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I mean you're absolutely right. I was out in the lobby when they were going to do that, and I got literally bear hugged by one of my volunteer assistant chiefs and drug into the ballroom for that. So.
No, like I said, I mean it was fantastic. And one thing I also want you to hit on, so for others to know, this is a good thing that we have very many conferences that are popping up all over the state, which is awesome because that just shows like, hey, firefighters really want to be involved. They want to make training a priority. But if somebody has that notion of doing something like that within their area, what kind of advice can you tell them beforehand before jumping, with both feet into making some sort of training weekend or a couple training days?
Pick the best people you know that are going to help support it and help move it along. There's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of time invested to make sure that everything flows the way it is. There was a picture taken of me during the weekend of me walking around one of the burn buildings on the phone, and that was my entire weekend was phone calls. Hey, this is going on. Hey, we need this or that, and it was busy, but it was a blast. And I had a bunch of people that were set different places and helped out with it, that they were a phone call away and they made everything happen.
Okay, so definitely having the right people with you, and I want others to know, like it's not easy work, right, Sean? It's like a lot of effort and time planning, logistics. Just so others, I want others to know, like it's not as easy as they might think it is.
It is certainly not easy. It's rewarding, to say the least. It's not easy. You have to make sure that you're willing to set aside time every day to do something with it. Some days you're gonna have to do more than you really want to, but at the end of the day, when you're establishing these events or putting on these larger training opportunities, you're setting up that opportunity for 50, 100, hundreds of other people that are going to benefit from it. So, at the end of the day, you got to get it done, but you got to know that it's an undertaking. And aside from having your core group of people to help you get that running, the biggest thing that I think anyone can agree with is you have to have industry support. Luckily for us, like for this big event, MSA's headquarters is on the same road that the host hotel was on. So the people at MSA were a huge supporter. They jumped on at the very, very beginning of it and pretty much opened up opportunities to us that may not have been available, in the sense of some answering some marketing questions, venues. I mean, you name it, they had a person that could help you with it. So, and they're not the only one. They were just the biggest and the first.
Right.
But having that industry support is crucial for events like this.
And with 2025 coming up, I want you to let others know what's next? What do you have planned for the next year's Jimmy Ellis Foundation?
So 2025, we're set to do it again. The hotel will be the same host hotel in Cranberry. Dates are booked August 15th through the 17th. Antique fire truck will be back in the lobby. Already got that approved. We're not looking to go much bigger as an overall footprint. We just want to fill it quicker and, get some more. We still had space that we could have accepted more participants, so we want to fill those seats where we can and really hone in on all the fine details of it. But we're looking to pretty much put on the same event with the changing out some different instructors maybe. But we'll still do all the social events that we did, raffles, giveaways, all the whole nine yards. If you're an instructor, you teach a class, we get the open call for instructors. We want to hear from everybody of who wants to teach what they want to teach here. So flyers are all over Facebook. Shoot us an email and we'll review them here towards the end of the year and make selections and hopefully have an even better event for the third year.
Okay. And with that being said, the 24 hours of training that you're also sponsoring. Let the listeners know about that.
So in September of, I forget if it was fall or the spring, but 2021, we held the first event. It's called the 24-hour ERS, and ERS stands for Emergency Response Simulations. We spent years trying to come up with a different name, can't figure out a different one, so that's what stuck. But the idea came from, you see FDTN, they do some great classes out there where it's scenario-based training, live fire. And there's been some other opportunities that have presented themselves of similar dynamic, but we want to do something local. And we had a great opportunity with Cranberry Township. They have a pretty large size training facility up on the hill right behind one of their fire stations. So after talking to some people like Jimmy, a gentleman named Scott Gehring, who's now the career chief in Cranberry, we wanted to make a training program that was kind of like a playground for firemen to be firemen, a place they could go and execute sets and reps, but not just in the realm of structural firefighting. So what we came up with is the crews would staff apparatus at the firehouse for 24 hours. They get dispatched just like a regular call, and we send them to any number of scenarios up on top of the hill in the training facility and in the park that surrounds it. There's a Class A burn building, so they can have they could be going to a structure fire, they can go to vehicle accident entrapment, tech rescues, car fires. I mean, we've done water rescues, full-scale trench rescues, structural collapse, confined space. We've tried to come up with basically any type of scenario that you might think you'd be able to respond to. We try to make a scenario like that up there. The first event was four apparatus and like 25 people. Last year's event was over 60 people on 12 apparatus for 24 hours. The next event's in May. The local students have already been picked, and it'll be another 12 apparatus and over 60 students and another 35 staff that help make it all go, getting the scenario set up and run and built. And that burn building is chugging constantly. Every hour and a half, there's a fire burn building.
Okay. No, that's fantastic. Over 12 pieces of apparatus staffed. That's that's a lot of calls. But that just goes to show you that you have eager firefighters that actually want to train, want to get better, want to do this job, regardless of what you hear, say, or see on social media. I think the fire service is definitely reaching a turning point when it comes to individuals that actually want to get better at the craft.
Absolutely. And we saw that it was at the beginning of it was a slow start. And then as people started participating in the training and talking about it, when we just put out the registration for it to pick apparatus, we had over 25 departments put in for it, all local, just because of the logistics of it. But there's definitely a want for it now. And the nice thing is the local apparatus, we keep those companies in service. You may not get your apparatus to your emergency, but somebody will go in your place. And twice now during the events, we've had working fires dispatched, and we're able to send more manpower on their first alarm than they would ever see.
Yeah, no, that's and especially to me, especially for the volunteer departments, because I'm not trying to say both volunteer, career, part-time combination, we all run the same thing. It's just going to be in a different frequency. So for the volunteers to get that type of experience, that type of exposure, that right there to me in itself is a game changer.
Absolutely.
As far as let me see here. As far as truly being there for one another in need, and you guys have, you especially have experience through that. What does that mean to you, for firefighters to be there for one another? Also, another term that's being used out there is called brotherhood. What does that mean to you?
I think the biggest thing with brotherhood is that you have somebody that a group of people that are like-minded individuals that, excuse me, and at the end of the day, right, wrong, or indifferent, they're standing by your side for what you're doing or what you're not doing. They're lifting you up and pushing you forward when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. They're willing to have those hard conversations, and as a group, the mindset is the same that is pushing the organization or organizations forward.
Okay. Here's like a personal question I always kind of like to ask the guests. So you're going up for, well, I mean, you're on the list for promotion, but where does Sean like to see himself in the future? And when I always ask this question, I always make sure to say it's not like for you a boast or a brag, but like where would you like to see yourself down the line in the fire service?
I want to keep progressing. I have about 6 years until I vest at Butler, which will open up opportunities for me to, if I find an opportunity I may want to test somewhere else, I have that opportunity. If not, I've established a pretty good life where I am right now. And it still puts me, when I'm eligible for retirement, I'll be 46. I can still go take a test then and get hired somewhere else. But I want to keep doing this career field. I want to keep pushing forward through it. I'm open though. I know that my girlfriend, who puts up with a lot of this with all the training, she loves the beach. So I don't know if we see ourselves down somewhere in beach weather later in life, or I don't know. Very open to where we go.
Okay. All right.
But definitely be the fire service.
Okay. And one thing that kind of caught my attention. All right. So explain, you mentioned 6 years till you're vested, but then you can go, you're eligible to take tests somewhere. If you could elaborate on that.
So we vest at 12 years, which means we guarantee our pension at a partial rate, and can you can do a deferred retirement. So once I hit that point, everything I've worked for at this point, I'll still get something in my retirement, which to me is a point where if I find an opportunity to test somewhere, that would be my starting point. If I stick it out till 20, then I'll get my full pension. So
Okay.
like after 12 years at my 20-year mark, when I would retire officially, I would get 12/20ths of what my pension would be. And then I get another 20th every year until I hit 20.
Okay. So, up in the Pennsylvania region, it's 20 years of service.
It's dependent upon the municipality you work for.
Okay.
Like I'm 20 years with no minimum age. Our new hires are now up to 25 years of service and age 50.
Okay. All right. Tracking now. Gotcha. 'Cause I was like a little bit thrown off. But you did mention like if you hit your 12 and this is just gonna be an example. I don't know. Let's say you go to the neighboring mu city municipality department. I'm assuming all your years and stuff like that transfer over there, right?
They do not.
They do not.
They do not. So everything is individually based as far as the municipality that you work for. So if I was at 12 years, I test to the neighboring department and get hired there, and I have to do 25 years there. At when I would complete my 20th year on paper at Butler, I will start collecting my reduced pension. So I can take that as almost, a salary contribution going to another job and then put my time in and get another pension.
Okay. All right. I'm tracking. It's very interesting how different areas and jurisdictions do their rules. It's one of those things too, because I've heard it before on other podcasts I listen to, like the fire service, especially when it comes to credentials. Like Pennsylvania's version of firefighter 1 and 2 is different from Florida, and like so you have certain parts of the state that will not recognize an individual certs. And I hope maybe there's somebody working on that, but I truly think like if we could dial in that when it comes to like if an individual needs to leave their home state to go to a different state to take care of a family member and they still want to be in the fire service, like the issue of getting their certs transferred would be a whole lot smoother. I think we would have a lot less turbulence when it comes to like individuals that have to leave and move to different regions, that want to work for fire departments.
I couldn't agree more. It almost seems in certain aspects with certain states and so on and so forth, like it's almost fighting itself as far as
Yes.
having ample numbers of firefighters, whether it's career or volunteer. Just you have a trained firefighter from another state that may have met all the same prerequisites, but this state doesn't recognize that state for whatever reason, and that's the only holdup.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay. All right. I got one more question for you. I want to hear your take on this. In your opinion only, which characteristic holds more weight? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on-the-job experience?
I think it's the best answer. That is a mix of all of them. Length of service does not equate to years of experience. Work ethic can speed up your experiences in a controlled environment such as training, but at the end of the day, on the job experiences take time to get. But you have to have the right mindset and understanding of the job and the position you're in for the experiences you have during that length of service to mean something or become something.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I always like to ask. I always like to ask. With that being said, Sean, I want to appreciate you coming on, man. Spreading the good word about what you guys are doing up in Pennsylvania for not only Jimmy Ellis, but the surrounding departments, whether your volunteer career, bringing in people together to train to get better at the job. A lot of hard work went into it. As I stated before, it was amazing to see the level of passion and how firefighters came together to train, learn, get better at the job. No short feat, I'm sure, because I remember passing you by, you were always on your phone or just going, hold on, let me take this call. So I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to let others know what you guys are doing up in Butler County and the fact that you had two respective different agencies that were pretty much essentially trying to do the same thing, but coming together and sharing the burden of spreading that love for Mr. Jimmy Ellis.
Yeah, we're doing some good things up here. I think that we're making a difference in at least some people. And the best part of it for me has to be the connections and the friendships I've made with people I've never thought that I'd get to meet. It's fun to sit here and you scroll through your phone contacts to try to call somebody, and these big name people that I probably don't deserve to have their number in my phone, I scroll past them every day.
I mean, that's true. But I will say, And we all kind of put them under this category, and I'm sure they hate it. Like, we call them like, the superstars, the big names. But when you really get to talk to them one-on-one, they're just individuals like us who you like, for instance, Scott Thompson. I mean, he's a humble, like he's not a guy that's gonna come into a room and like demand everyone like look at me. But when you talk to him, the work, the education, the sacrifices that he put in into the fire service just goes to show you that hard work truly does pay off. Like nothing comes easy. Individuals have to put in the sweat, the time, and the grind in order to make things happen for themselves. And to me, that's what you are doing. And you're not trying to like, have everyone put the light on you, but what you are doing is great for Butler County.
I appreciate that, and I mean you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, everything we're doing is for the memory of somebody or for the firefighters that surround us to become something. And like I've told everybody, this event becoming what it is unfortunately, we had an opportunity arise out of the most tragic event to happen. If it wasn't for his passing, I don't know if we would be doing some of the things we're doing. And that just goes back to show that a lot of this is from the support of so many people that Jimmy was friends with and taught with, in wanting to do something and putting the time in to do what we've done. So I can't thank all those people enough.
No, it's awesome. Beautiful. Okay. All right. Like I said, Sean, I really appreciate you coming on, talking shop, and spreading the message out there of what you guys are doing. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on here. I like I said, it took some time to get this. I remember driving to work one day, listening to your podcast, and 3 hours later my phone rang and it was you. That was an odd day, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are. But no, I appreciate you accepting the phone call and yeah, making this happen. So thank you.
Thanks.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.